Have a great weekend.
Prevention is considering your loved ones by securely storing medication away from children and pets. Keep your loved ones safe. And remember, let's stop stigma, Sullivan County. Paid for by Sullivan Allies Leading Together.
I'm Jason Dole, letting you know Radio Catskills Music Yard Sale is happening right now, going till 3 here at our studios in Liberty. Thousands of vinyl records, thousands of CDs, plus turntables, stereos, instruments, oddities, and more. But folks are here and the buying's brisk, so if there's something you want, you better get out here and grab it before it's gone. Radio Catskills Music Yard Sale, going till 3 this afternoon, right here in our studios in Liberty, New York.
Hi, I'm David Dan. Join me Saturdays at noon for 2 hours of America's classical music on Jazz Lives. We'll explore the century-old tradition of jazz in all its forms. That's Jazz Lives, Saturdays at noon, only on Radio Catskill.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. You know, you never know who you might meet when a friend invites you to their Passover Seder. This year, I was so fortunate to meet the composer, Ricky Ian Gordon, who has a house up here on Wolf Lake in Wurtsboro, and he's joining me today on Catskill Character. Here's what Stephen Holder wrote in the New York Times about Ricky. If the music of Ricky Ian Gordon had to be defined by a single quality, it would be the bursting effervescence infusing songs that blithely blur the lines between art song and the high-end Broadway music of Leonard Bernstein and Stephen Sondheim. It's caviar for a world gorging on pizza. Welcome to Catskill Character, Ricky. Thank you for all the caviar.
Thank you for having me.
You were born in Oceanside, Long Island, and you have three sisters, and I was wondering what kind of an influence they were on your life.
They were a big influence because, for one thing, I'm 7 years older than the youngest, than Sheila. So Susan, the oldest, was 12 years older than me, and Lorraine was 10 years older than me, and they were all brilliant, but they were also very involved. So if something was happening that was seminal and historical, they were there, which is why Don Katz wrote that book about my family, Home Fires, because if you were writing a book about the times, we were somehow miraculously at everything that was happening in that time. And my oldest sister, Susan, after Vassar became a big journalist, wrote about rock and roll music and feminism, started the Rolling Stone with her husband, Michael Lydon. My sister, Lorraine, was a big rock and roll jazz guitarist at festivals like Randall's Island, famous for a feminist track. And Sheila's a painter. So there was definitely some DNA in my family, and I captured it from them.
You actually grew up in Harbor Isle, which is a little island off the town of Island Park.
Yes.
And this wasn't exactly a happy, carefree childhood, considering your father had rage issues and you were bullied at school. That's never fun. But you had your sisters, and your mother had been quite a star up here in the Borscht Belt. You said somewhere that with her, it was like Fanny Bryce was living in the house. But she gave all of that up to raise a family. And as you just mentioned, there's actually a book written about your family titled Home Fires. But you were always exposed to music, as you just told us. And you told me that you fell in love with opera when you were 8.
Yes. It was an accident. Really what happened was I was at my friend Peter's piano lesson, and a book, I swear this book jumped off the shelf at me, and there was light and smoke behind it. And the book was called The Victor Book of Opera. And by the end of Peter's lesson, I was transfixed, and that was it. I became obsessed with opera. I brought Peter along with me, and we're still obsessed with it. He's a big famous agent, and I'm a composer. And our friend Arthur, who was also in on it, is a huge voice teacher in New York.
Okay, so after high school, you went to Carnegie Mellon University, which is in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And you studied piano, composition, and I think one other thing.
Acting.
Acting, of course. You were also extremely well-read, and you were always a lover of poetry. And Ricky, you suggested I read Marie Howe, and I did read some of her poems, including What the Living Do. We don't have time to dissect this poem, but I think most people will understand it, especially those who've lost someone. It's such a gem. Could you maybe give us a couple of lines from that poem?
Yes, it's about her brother Johnny, who died of AIDS at the age of 28. And it just goes, "Johnny, the kitchen sink has been clogged for days. Some utensil probably fell down there. And the Drano won't work, but smells dangerous. And the crusty dishes have piled up waiting for the plumber I still haven't called. This is the everyday we spoke of." That's the very beginning of it.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's stunning. The poem, as for me, was a lifesaver. I was so crippled by grief, and that poem became like an inner anthem for me. You know, I had it memorized, and I had so many stories about the poem. I mean, one time I was at Barbara Cook's house playing her music, and she said to me at one point, "You know, I don't like poetry. I don't get it." And I almost fainted. I was like, "Barbara, that's like saying you don't like the Pacific Ocean." And so then I recited that poem to her, and she became obsessed with Maria's poetry and poetry, and she recited that poem at the death of her dearest friend.
That's wonderful. You transformed her.
I did. I love that.
After 3.5 years, you left Carnegie Mellon and you moved to New York City. A lot happened there. You began to have some major career moments, as they say, a lot with singers. Singers loved you. You had been sort of flying under the radar, but you started to emerge. You got sober in 89, and this is where your grief comes in. Sadly, in 96, your partner Jeffrey died of AIDS, and you did a little more than just what the living do. In 97, you put together a concert at Symphony Space called A Concert for Jeffrey's Birthday, honoring your longtime partner, with the proceeds going to Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS and the Actors Fund AIDS Initiative. You have so many stories, Ricky, but if you can, what would you most want to tell the listener about your success and how it happened?
Well, first of all, I didn't truly become successful, I would say, until I got sober. I would say until then, I was spottily successful. And you were right that singers would sing my songs and they would get out into the world. But like Faye Dunaway says in Barfly, "Look, I drink, and when I drink, I move in the wrong direction." And that's what I was sort of doing. I was moving in the wrong direction. But I got sober. And a big event happened that was key to everything, which was that a woman named Terry McCarthy was singing my songs, and she wanted to record them. She took me to a guy named Adam Gettle's loft, and I didn't know who he was, but he was Richard Rodgers' grandson. His loft was like the size of an entire city. And Adam heard my music that day and asked me to perform in his loft at a benefit for the gay men's health crisis. Everyone in the world was there, and he put me last. And his mother is Mary Gettle, or Mary Rodgers, Richard Rodgers' daughter. As soon as I was done, she and Sheldon Harnick came up to me, Sheldon, who wrote the lyrics for Fiddler on the Roof, and said, "Who are you, and why don't we know about you?" And, you know, I couldn't say, like, because I've sort of been under a rock. But that was it. Then Mary had me over 2 weeks later to play for herself for 2 hours. Then she had me over for the Rodgers and Hammerstein Foundation. I got a publishing contract. Meanwhile, I had written Harlan Blackwell a cycle called Genius Child. RCA heard it at Carnegie Hall and said, "We're recording it." So within, like, I didn't even have 90 days yet, and I had a recording contract and a publishing contract because Rodgers and Hammerstein paid for me to live for 5 years, to live and write.
When you say I didn't have 90 days, you mean you didn't have 90 days sober?
Yeah, I was still counting days. It was like, it was a miracle. I thought it was my higher power's way of saying, yeah, that was the right move. Giving up drugs and alcohol, good move.
Didn't Mary Rodgers write a book?
Shy.
I read that book. I'm going to have to go back because I'm sure you're in that book.
I'm in that book. We were close at one point, and she's in my book a lot.
That's
so
song,
is Adam.
I'm shy.
Yeah. From Once Upon a Mattress.
With Carol Burnett.
Yes, exactly.
Oh,
and
fantastic.
Mary was far from shy.
So you did this concert, and how fabulous doing this concert for such a sad thing that happened in your life.
Well, but it was incredible because Jeffrey was a writer, and I put together a script of his writing, and I had the actress Cherry Jones and the actor Marty Moran narrate all night by reading Jeffrey's works. And then I had everyone was in this concert, Audra McDonald, Harolyn Blackwell, Camellia Johnson, Judy Blazer, just every singer I knew was in that concert, and it was a spectacular evening. It was not a sad occasion, it was very joyous, except at the end, I came out and sang a song I had written for Jeffrey when he was in the hospital called We Will Always Walk Together. It was a really incredible, cathartic, amazing night. And
Wow. And
it was on his birthday, March 10th.
Oh, that's great. He was a Pisces?
Yes. I love Pisces. I'm a Taurus. Taurus and Pisces get along.
Perfect. You've said many times that you see yourself as a vessel, as a worker among workers, and you're grateful to serve with the keystone of your life being humility. And these are words for all of us to live by, not just for people in the program. So as far as being a human and a composer goes, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
I mean, for one thing, even those things you said, there's nothing I could say to idealize myself, that all of those things are things I reach for and sometimes achieve. I'm also very neurotic. I'm very self-conscious. I'm very insecure about my work. I'm constantly thinking I'm not Stravinsky. But the truth is, all of that said, I have somehow shown up, and this is the one thing I'll say, is I know I've created a remarkable and beautiful body of work. And of all the things I dislike about myself, the music I write is not one of them. And I would say, if I was talking to another artist, hate everything about yourself if you want, but like your work. If you don't like your work, then you shouldn't be doing it.
As a therapist, I used to work with a lot of artists. Mostly painters. I've never met a more insecure group of people.
That talk to the composers. They're crazy. Because, you know, every artist knows, for example, take a brush and put it to the canvas and you know you're not Picasso. You know you're not Beethoven if you're a composer. That said, a part of you has to know, but I am Ricky Ian Gordon. And that brush stroke or those five notes are going to sound like me. And I'm the only me that ever lived.
Yes. It's,
and I said that to Kevin this morning, Kevin Doyle, my partner, because he's writing a book and he was talking about all the people writing about what he's writing about. And I said, but Kevin Doyle is the only one writing about what you're writing about. And that is the one thing you have to have faith in.
Absolutely.
That your imprimatur is deeply important and it's exactly what the world needs.
Yes. And you know, you said something really, really important. I used to have this saying with my patients because they were always comparing themselves to people. And I said, compare equals complain. Because when you compare, you're going to either end up complaining about yourself because you're not as good as so-and-so, or you're going to complain about the person you're comparing yourself to.
Donna, they say in AA, compare, despair.
There you go.
Yeah. It's hell. I have so many things. Like, I have a lot of envy and jealousy. I have all the seven deadly sins times 10 million, but I use it. For example, when Audra McDonald was going to be doing a concert at Carnegie Hall, seven composers, of which I was included, were asked to write a new cycle of the seven deadly sins, and each of us were going to be a sin. And before anyone, I said, I have to write envy. And I reached deep, baby. I really wrote about envy. My song was the most intense of that cycle.
Wow.
Can you look me in the eyes? I am your envy. I can spoil any party, ruin your fun. It was really...
Whoa.
It was dark.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a quick break and we'll come back. And I'd love for you to talk when we come back about your work through the years and what you're doing now.
Yes.
This is Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today is Ricky Ian Gordon. We'll be right back.
Radio Catskill, keeping New York voters connected. New York State's primary election is June 23rd. You may register to vote by mail, at your local Board of Elections, or any state agency participating in the National Voter Registration Act. Your application must be received no later than June 13th in order to vote in this primary election. In-person early voting runs June 13th through June 21st. Info at elections.ny.gov.
On this week's On the Media, I spoke to the MAGA warrior who ended up defending the Federal Emergency Management Agency against the administration's assault.
He proceeded to berate me over the fact that the media got a hold of a story and was running a topic that they felt was too sensitive and not fit for public domain.
The topic was abolishing FEMA.
Correct.
You don't want to miss this one. Tune in to On the Media from WNYC. This afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. If you've just joined us, with me today is the composer Ricky Ian Gordon, who has a house in the community of Wolf Lake in Wurtsboro, New York. In the first half of the show, Ricky shared a bit about his early years growing up on Long Island in an unusual family. He spoke about living in New York City and how he came to have quite a reputation amongst singers. Also about his love of poetry and how getting sober at the age of 33 changed everything. Let's continue. Ricky, you are so prolific. It would be impossible for us to discuss everything you've done. There's the major operas, the theater pieces, starting with the Tibetan Book of the Dead in 1995, to the opera This House, which was just mounted in 2025. Yes. Then there's key song cycles and collections like Genius Child in 92, to the piece Late Afternoon, which is actually six songs for mezzo-soprano. And there's many other notable works, including your memoir, Seeing Through, a Chronicle of Sex, Drugs, and Opera, which was published in 2024. And this doesn't include all of the other things you've done and are currently working on. I'd love for you to take a project that's most dear to your heart and talk about your process. But before we do that, first I have to say, of course, my listeners can't see you. I'm struck by the stamina it must take to be you and by your physique. You appear to be very physically fit. You're looking good, baby.
Thanks, baby. You know what? I was this whole thing about being beat up a lot when I was little. At one point in junior high school, I decided I had to be strong. And so I started very early on exercising. By the time I got to Carnegie Mellon, I was like a muscle man because I just thought I have to at least look impermeable, even if I was easy to torture.
Absolutely. I mentioned several of your works. Is there any one or perhaps two that carry particular meaning and weight for you?
You mentioned Tibetan Book of the Dead is my first opera, and my biggest opera is The Grapes of Wrath, which has been done at Carnegie Hall twice with Jane Fonda narrating. But the thing I want to say about the Tibetan Book, because you ask about process, Jeffrey was dying, and he decided he wanted to die as a Buddhist. And he asked me if I would learn the Buddhist teachings and help him die as a Buddhist. So I was merely doing my research, and I was reading the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying when I got a commission from Houston Grand Opera. And somehow David Gottlieb, who ran that opera company, suggested, why not an opera about what you're doing? So that's how the opera of Tibetan Book of the Dead came about. I was writing an opera in the presence of my partner who was dying, and it was an opera to help him die. And it was profound and life-changing. And when you talk about being a vessel, I had no time to think about it. I had to write that opera. Write, orchestrate, the whole thing happened in a year. There was even, the second section is called The Moment of Death. You know, when she sings, my friend, now is the moment of death. The time has come for you to start out. You are going home. And that's what I was supposed to play for Jeffrey when he was dying. But the morning he died, I couldn't play it because he was sitting straight on me, looking in my face. So I sang it to him, a cappella. But there's something very important happening, which is that premiered in 1996. To this day, I still think it's one of the most beautiful things I've ever written. And absolutely, I cannot even tell you what my thought system was because I had no, it was like writing in the emergency room. But last year, I recorded my book at audible.com, and the sound engineer there and I became friends. And I started giving him tapes of Tibetan Book of the Dead from 1996. And because of AI, he started updating those things into exquisite sound files. Then I sent them to my friend Sergey, who runs Blue Griffin Records. Well, the Tibetan Book of the Dead is about to come out, the recording. And all those singers that starred in it all became stars, like Eric Owens, one of the most famous basses in the world, Nicole Heaston, gigantic soprano star. It's a miracle. This opera is coming out, and because of contemporary technology that allows hissing, awful cassette tapes to suddenly be turned into these exquisite recordings. I mean, they're live and they're archival, but it's coming out, and I'm so proud of it and so excited about it, and I never thought the world would ever get to hear it like this.
Oh.
There's a resonance around it because those people who were in that opera knew exactly what they were singing about. By the time they met Jeffrey, it was like everybody cried.
So Jeffrey got to hear the final.
He came to Houston for the world premiere, and then he got sick in Houston, and we had to send him right home. He couldn't even see it there. And I have a whole opera about that called Green Sneakers. But then he came to Philadelphia, where it went next. He saw it in Philadelphia. It was very moving. I introduced him to the audience as my muse, and then he died like 2 months later. The connection that made for me is where I go to write. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I believe my work has any resonance, is that I know you have to connect with something in yourself that's very personal in order to write anything resonant. And that was certainly, it was like an explosion happened inside of me. When he died, I was just 5 years of such intense grief, and, you know, I was paralyzed. But then a whole body of work came out of it. And, you know, I'm with someone new now. I'm with Kevin, and that happened 5 years after Jeffrey. And it's just, the world changes. But boy, that was an intense time in my life. And I'm so excited that people are going to get to hear the Tibetan Book of the Dead.
Oh, that's wonderful. They do say that when you have a really wonderful love, it's much easier in a way, not to repeat it, but to have someone else.
Yeah.
You want that. You want that again. You want something, if not the same, at least as comforting and close. And I'm so happy for you that you have Kevin.
Me too. And that I think that love teaches you how to love.
Love teaches you. Yeah, thank you. You put it much more simply.
Well, I mean, that's just it. It's like, and, you know, and now I've been with Kevin, like 25 years or something. And that is exactly it. And, like, you know, it was painful at first with Kevin because there were pictures of Jeffrey everywhere. And it was like a mausoleum here. But, of course, we've moved on from that. And I feel like that's a part of my past, just like anything else is a part of his past. And I feel like we're so respectful of each other's lives and past. And I feel bad for people that don't have that kind of love in their life. Because what is it really, Donna? Friendship. He's my best friend in the world.
At the end of the day, it's the person that makes you laugh the hardest and that you want to talk to about something that just happened to you. You want to rush home and tell them.
Yes. You want them to see the movie you liked. You want to share every piece of music you like with them. You want to drive them crazy, turning them on to everything you love.
Yes. And vice versa.
That's
right. You want to hear from them. Oh my God. I can't even ask you any more questions.
Oh.
I mean, that was just so unbelievable.
You know what? Can I ask? There was one thing you were going to talk about. I want to say one thing about one thing.
Tell me.
Well, you really liked the commencement speech.
Oh no, I'm still talking about that.
All right, because I have a story about that.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm talking about that when I thank you for joining me today.
Okay.
And what a thrill it's been, obviously. And I want to tell the listener that they have to check out RickyEanGordon.com, your website.
Oh, yes.
Because I absolutely loved, I mean, the whole website is great, but I loved the commencement address you gave at the University of Michigan School of Music, Theater, and Dance in 2018. And also, they can keep up with whatever you've got going on. And what do you want to say about that?
Well, what was great about it was I felt so much pressure to do it. And I wrote this huge speech. And one day I read it to Kevin. And as I was reading it, I was like, oh, this sucks. It's horrible. And Kevin didn't even say anything because it was like, yep, it's pretty bad. And so I decided, this is in, about therapy, Donna, I decided I'm not going to do it. And I went to therapy that day and I said, I can't do it. I don't know what to say. And then I said to my therapist, the only thing I have that's me is everything that I've always been inviolably drawn to. And once I started talking about that, Donna, the whole speech came to me. So I came home, I wrote it, and then I read that speech to Kevin. And Kevin was like, where did that come from? Because that took 5 minutes. Do you know what I mean? And then I gave the speech, and the speech was so organic and so me, because I had to write this thing that I thought was clever and funny and sophisticated and a turd. I had to create a turd before I could create a diamond. And I knew it was a diamond once I said it, because it was like I had to go through so much to get to the core of what I have to offer.
You know, as a therapist, I just got to say, I love that you were sitting in your therapist's office and you were complaining about, you know, this thing that you wrote, and you're a vessel, so it's sort of to come through you. And I always say to people, when they ask me, what is it that you do? I always say, I try to help people get out of their own way. And that's exactly what you did when you were sitting there. You just got out of the way and let it come.
Well, and Donna, you brought this up, but it ends with me singing a song called A Horse With Wings, right? I had just gone into therapy. I was 24. And therapy was so explosive for me, so my heart opened in a way it never had, that one day I left therapy and A Horse With Wings came to me in one flash. The words, the music, everything came to me. So that song was an explosion out of being in therapy for the first time and finally speaking my truth.
There's no words. I'm so happy that you joined me today. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you, Donna. It was a pleasure. I hope we see each other again at Judy Maidenbaum's house.
Absolutely.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 11:30. Please join me then to hear more exciting stories from fabulous characters of the Catskills. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Thanks so much for listening.
The things they told me way back then were really so. I want to make a little mark before I go. Not bad. Just get by. I wanna fly.
Support comes from Seminary Hill, open Thursday through Sunday in Calicoon, featuring dinner with a view, live music on Fridays, and weekend brunch, orchard and cidery tours and tastings every Sunday at 11 a.m. This summer, picnics, line dancing, and rural upskilling workshops return. Lessons in foraging, pickling, and baking sourdough. Tickets available on Resy. More information at seminaryhill.co. From generous funding from the Public Media Bridge Fund and from listeners like you.
On last week's Wait Wait, Joelle Nicole Johnson predicted people will enjoy watching other people play Wordle on TV.
My boyfriend does that. He watches his friends play video games, and that's how I know he'll never cheat on me.
I'm Peter Sagal. This week we say hello to musician Brandi Carlile and a fond farewell to Bill Curtis as he becomes scorekeeper emeritus. Join us for the news quiz from NPR.
Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me, Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Jason Dole, letting you know Radio Catskills Music Yard Sale is happening right now, going till 3 here at our studios in Liberty. Thousands of vinyl records, thousands of CDs, plus turntables, stereos, instruments, oddities, and more. But folks are here and the buying's brisk, so if there's something you want, you better get out here and grab it before it's going, gone. Radio Catskills Music Yard Sale, going till 3 this afternoon, right here in our studios in Liberty, New York.
Hi, this is Angela Page. I host Folk Plus Sundays at 2. For many, many years, my good friend Andrea Hine who frequented folk shows, would keep a list in her wallet of perfect songs. I was always intrigued what she called a perfect song, and I asked her to do an hour on Folk Plus of her perfect songs. Sunday at 2, here on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville.